Welcome back to the Jeff Force Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on this Friday morning. 251-343-0106. I will try to get through the rest of these angry texts at some point before the conclusion of today's masterpiece. So just stick around. I know a lot of you upset and got a lot on your chest to talk about when it comes to marijuana. Anyway, enough of that. Joining us now on the line, our returning champion, always a pleasure to bring on State Senator Chris Elliott. Senator Elliott, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. It sounds like you got everybody riled up already this morning.
Well, I didn't. One of your colleagues did. But, you know, it happens in the crazy world of public affairs sometimes.
Indeed. Indeed.
The session keeps humming along. The budgets look like there's a lot of reasons for things. There's stuff in them that people seem to be pretty happy with. There's going to be some other things come up. I guess All Britain's gambling bill seems to have really captivated the attention of the media right now. Does it get through the Senate this time again, you think, but does the same thing it did last year in the House?
In all probability, if it gets through the Senate, it will meet the same fate in the House. I just don't see an appetite down there. I don't think that any of the calculation has really changed as far as votes go in the House. I'll be honest with you, Senator Albritton dropped that bill yesterday afternoon. I have not had the opportunity to go through those three bills, really. As long as it is substantially similar to what he was passed out of the Senate last time, I think probably got a good chance of getting it out of the Senate. The question is really going to be, how much time do we want to spend on this and debating this again if it has little or no prospects in the House? And with only, we're two-thirds through the session, the likelihood that we get in a position where we have it occupying a lot of floor time in both chambers, if there's not a clear path, forward, do we really want to do that? And is there merit in doing that? I'm sure Senator Albritton would argue there is. I'm just not sure if leadership is going to feel the same way.
Well, you were very skeptical of this the last time around. Like it took a lot of work on that last bill to get your vote, and I think a lot of your colleagues were the same way. And it was interesting to watch how that played out, because a lot of it was this, right? That it wasn't necessarily an ideological thing. Maybe. For some of you it was, but for a lot of your colleagues, it was just you gotta cater something that satisfies the locals, right? That this wasn't an easy lift, is what I guess I'm trying to say. Like as we saw last time,
I hate talking about gaming legislation because it's so complicated. But I'll just say this: the folks want to vote on this. They absolutely want to vote on gaming. They want to vote on a lottery. They want to vote on sports betting. The people want to vote on it. The polling is unquestionable. The problem is, in order to get something through the legislature that can get put on the ballot, to get the votes to put it on the ballot, to let the people vote on it, it has to be so festooned with stuff that I don't think people are going to like that I'm afraid, they're going to end up not voting for it when it's on the ballot, me included, because it's such a mess. And we've got a mess in Alabama. I'm just not sure that this is the way to fix it. It's a mess.
And
the politics that have to get played are so unsavory that it's just frustrating to see what comes out on the other end.
But a lot of it is kind of, it's almost a textbook study in Alabama politics, because you got to look at the big picture of the state, and then really it's some of it is partisan, some of it is R's and D's, but a lot of it is what benefits my local constituents. So what benefit, you know, that a lot of the motivation, a lot of the actors, a lot of the people that are acting as they do in that body are acting on behalf of their local, very local constituents. It's one of these things where the interest of the state all kind of come together, and trying to make that sausage is very difficult.
It is, and it can not be pretty when you get done with it. And I'll tell you this, too. There are folks that will vote in favor of this this lottery and gaming legislation because it precludes gaming in their particular district. Thinking about it that way, too, and it is just it's just odd. And I think that the people are going to someday get their chance to vote on lottery, whether it's this year or not, or gaming as a whole. But I think they're going to be left in a position to look at it and say, I want to vote on this, but I can't be in favor of what's before us right now. And I don't know what to tell folks except for that is the political process. It is frustrating as all get out, but I'm committed to getting something on the ballot for them to vote on, whether they like it, you know, what the end process is or not.
That's pretty much where your constituents are, though, right? They just want the opportunity to vote on it. They don't like all these, you know, the winners and losers and the, you know, what it does with casino gaming and what it means in other parts of the state, et cetera. They just want the lottery.
They do, and they want an opportunity to vote on it, and I'm committed to giving them that opportunity and to trusting the voters to make the right decision for the state of Alabama, even if what we were able to put in front of them is not all that pretty.
Well, and like I said, you guys, you're trying to understand this and why it's just not that simple, though. You got to look at every little locality around the state and how these coalitions are formed. And it's just that's the problem. Trying to explain it to some of my listeners sometimes that, you know, it's a heavy lift. It's heavy lift on purpose to change the state constitution. And it's just a matter of marshaling those votes. Well, to get enough votes to get something on the ballot to vote on, you got to make a lot of different people happy because there's just a number of people in Alabama, particularly the Republican side, are just never gamers.
You are correct. Never gamers. And then on the other side, you've got the ones that want everything in the kitchen sink. And unless they get it, they're not going to be on board. And unfortunately, that leaves the rest of us kind of shaking our heads going, can we just do a paper lottery? And, of course, the answer is no. the votes aren't there for that because the two extremes won't let that happen.
Well, it's back in the news, and like I said, I know you kind of when it comes up, but we'll have to go through this song and dance every time it comes up for the foreseeable future, I suspect. Senator, budgets are coming together, as I mentioned. A lot of attention, I guess, put on the ETF coming out of the House. What do you think?
You know, I think it's a good start. Representative Garrett in that seat, really for the first time. Sharp guy, understands finances as well as probably anybody in the House. Certainly a good pick for that chairmanship. He's a friend, and I've got a lot of respect for him. You know, it's time for the Senate to do their work and go through it with a fine-tooth comb. There's some things that aren't in there that I'd like to be in there, but we'll go through the process and see if we can get those things where they need to be in the Senate here. It's interesting that it's coming out, in my opinion, as late as it is. I mean, we're two-thirds through the session. You know, that's not terribly unusual, but it seems to be unusual for this quadrennium. Those budgets we try to get passed pretty early on and move on. But this is going to take a while. I don't expect it to fly through in a week or so. I think it's going to take a 2 or 3 weeks to get back on the floor. I could be wrong there, but that's where I think it's headed, just as we massage things upstairs and get it where it needs to be.
What do you think is going to happen with this Literacy Act delay? Tell me kind of, well, I won't put you on the spot there. But there's a lot of talk about how Roger Smitherman is a guy that gets stuff done and how he's able to pull that off. He got a 2-year delay through the Alabama Senate on the Literacy Act. I guess its future is up in the air downstairs. What the house is going to do, but we it's hard. This one could go either way, couldn't it? You could have a 2-year delay, or you could have no delay at all on the Literacy Act as we sit here today. Is that a fair assessment?
It is. You know, I think that the House really needs to decide what they want to do. You know, last year they ended up cloturing their own caucus member, Representative Collins, when a 2-year delay was on the floor. And then the governor ended up vetoing it. So if I'm in the House right now, I think they need to get with the governor, figure out what the governor wants, so that what ends up passing is something that the governor is going to sign, so we don't end up in the same situation again. That seems to be the clear path forward. Figure out what the governor wants and figure out where the House is. I'd be happy with a 1-year delay. I don't particularly like a 2-year delay. Didn't vote for a 2-year delay. This last time, it's time to go ahead and get on with this. In my mind, kids are where they are. They need the help they need, and they don't need to be continuing to be moved up through the ranks if they're not reading at grade level. It's time to quit that. It's time to quit it now.
Now, Representative Collins, Superintendent Mackey, they're very, very. They'll push back. When you talk about the Literacy Act, they want you not to think of it as a retention bill. They want you to be focused on the coaches, the resources it puts into literacy, and what it does. It's supposed to, you know, it offers all these opportunities for struggling students to get caught up. And they don't, they're very, very, very reluctant to even bring up that retention portion of it. So, you know, looking at some of the tweaks that have been made, and then you got this, the Senator Orr's Numeracy Act being considered. Do you think we're learning enough there that this is going to be, in the end, a good product for the state?
It has to be. We're doing so poorly that at some point there has to be accountability, and that's accountability across the board. Whether it's the Numeracy Act and saying, listen, we're going to come in, we're going to provide the coaches, we're going to help you, we're going to provide additional resources, we're going to help you, we're going to, you know, provide additional help at the local level from the State Board of Education to help you if you're failing. We're going to do that. But at the end of the day, there's accountability, and that is, you know, the option to take over a school system if it is continuously and habitually failing the children. Same thing with the Literacy Act. There's accountability at the end of it for parents, for teachers, and yes, for the children. You've got to be able to buckle down and do this. We're going to provide all kinds of help that we can in order to get you to succeed. But at the end of the day, just as in life, there's accountability. And you got to figure out how to master these skills in order to move on. And I know that sounds so tough to some people, but it's not. You know, Senator Marsh the other day talked about how he was held back in the first grade and how it was tough for him, but it was a great thing for him because he wasn't ready to move on. And you know, Senator Marsh went on to be the pro tem of the Senate, a very successful businessman. I mean, sometimes that type of accountability is necessary, like early in life, in order to be successful later in life. And that's important for parents and teachers and, yes, children to understand.
I did not realize that. Those of you who don't know, Senator Del Marsh, formerly the pro tem of the Senate, probably owns half of the city of Anniston, or maybe he once owned it. I think he's divested of a lot of it. But very, very, very successful, wealthy man. You know, he had his struggles, apparently, early on, it seems.
Well, he did, and he shared that story on the floor, so I don't feel bad, you know, saying that now. But, you know, he talked about that and just how impactful it was for him in order to get where he needed to be in order to move on. And I think that's, I certainly have a lot of respect for him sharing that. But there are countless stories of that. It's not the end of the world if something like that happens. However, if you end up, you know, being constantly behind year after year after year, it can be very troublesome for a young person to never feel like they've caught up, never have the skills that they need in order to proceed. And frankly, for the children that are reading at or above grade level, it's tough because the teachers are always and you know, focusing on the remedial students and trying to get them up to grade level. There's a reason we measure this. There's a reason we say, hey, are you reading at grade level? And that's because that's more important than age in progressing and matriculating. So, you know, some measure of accountability is not bad in this world. We've gotten so sensitive to everybody's feelings that we're not looking quantitatively at where people are, and that they're sometimes we're just not where we need to be, and that's okay too. We just need to fix it before we matriculate.
Well, and we'll get you out of here on this, but how much of this is the pushback against these types of bills that have an accountability mechanism? How much of it really is, do you think, the teachers' union that is, you know, successfully marshaling support against these measures? I mean, is it really that fear of accountability, or are there legitimate concerns that this may not be in the best interest of the student?
I think that there are concerns across the board, from infrastructure, like where are we going to get an extra third grade classroom, you know, to teachers, where are we going to get an extra, you know, two or three third grade teachers, frankly, to the students themselves and what this does to the student and how it makes them feel. And listen, those are all things that we should take into effect and into account. There's no question about it. You know, whether or not it's a teacher union issue, I don't know. It is certainly an issue that has people concerned about change. And that change is, for the first time in a long time, we are looking at our education system and we are saying we have got to do something. And what has been put out there, I think, are reasonable measures, both in the Literacy Act and the Numeracy Act, to make sure our students are being successful, to provide the resources necessary to make sure that those who want to be successful have the resources and the help they need in order to be successful. And yes, in the case of the Literacy Act, to say to provide an accountability measure to say, and if you're not, then you don't get to matriculate. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's a good thing for students, for teachers, for schools, and for our economy as a whole.
Senator, you've been very kind to stick with us and work us through that, but we're up against a break, and let's talk again soon.
Sounds good, Jeff. Have a great weekend.
You do the same. State Senator Chris Elliott there joining us for his weekly appearance. Let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. I learned the past.